Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 241 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Con Whiteley. And today's episode is on how activity scheduling reduces depression. And it is Saturday the 2nd of December 2023 as I record this. So we're in the final month of the year. And whilst I have to admit that is a very scary thought because it means we only have 1 month left and then we are in 2024. But it's the Christmas season and because I'm feeling really good, I'm actually really excited about it. Because I think December will actually be a really good month. So I am looking forward to it. So the reason why I've decided to do this podcast episode is I'll probably talk about this more in the personal update, but activity scheduling is one of those basics in psychology. Basically, it's a form of behavioural activation, which means that you've actually got to make someone do a behaviour, and in this case, it's something that they enjoy. And I had always known this. Hell, I think every single psychology student does, but I've actually completely forgotten to use this in my own mental health. So when I actually got to finish an activity I really enjoy on Monday, and I felt so good after that, I was like, oh yeah, this is why activity scheduling is important. So I wanted to do a podcast episode on it, just so everyone else can learn about it and understand about why this is such a good thing. So you've got that to look forward to in the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the psychology news section. We're bringing from the British Psychological Society Research Digest. And the first one is rather good. Why do we ignore the consequences of our actions? We all engage in willful ignorance from time to time. From buying from online retailers we know are unethical, to ignoring the impact of our diet on climate change, none of us are angels. Whilst looking the other way can help us avoid uncomfortable information that might make us question our actions, it may also reduce our desire to engage in behaviours that benefit others. How and to what degree, and to encourage more altruistic behaviour, is explored in a new meta-analysis published in Psychological Bulletin by Lin Wu and colleagues. And I'll just read you some of the final paragraph on the BPS's write-up. The team suggests moving away from an emphasis on a behaviour we should be doing. This, they say, can put people under pressure, threaten their self-image and to create avoidance. Instead, letting people remind themselves of their existing moral values before making decisions could be a better way of making them engage with the fallout of their decisions. Okay. So this, I think, is always quite an interesting idea because, yeah, absolutely right. None of us are angels because, I mean, like all of us, we basically every single person I know, and you're probably like, you know, we're different. We all would buy like tons of clothes, which is the second most polluting industry on the planet after fossil fuels. We all buy from massive multi-international companies that cross the lives out of the smaller businesses, etc. And so none of us are like angels. But I'm sure that I was saying like some of those, and I was almost making like attacking points. Some of you were thinking, well, everyone does it. It's just a part of like society. I'm okay, etc. So, and that's a perfect form of like avoidance. I've done it tons of times, like this week when I've had certain friends with very particular friends, which I'm now going to avoid bringing up certain topics simply because I don't want to be made to feel bad about my choices though. So the idea that there's now a psychology finding, or there's actual research into how do we change this and how do we get people to engage in the fallout of their decisions, is really good, really useful, but there is sort of the age-old question. Now that we've actually got this research, how do we apply it in the real world and make people actually listen to it? So that, I think, will be very good and quite interesting to see what's the next step for this finding. So the second one is extreme heat linked with uneven cognitive decline. Extreme heat is a well-known threat to our health, with older people being especially vulnerable to developing hypothermia and heat stroke, and subsequently dying. Now, new research from the US suggests that heat poses a longer-term health risk for many older people too, though that risk is not spread equally. Ian Young Chung at New York University and colleagues found evidence that cumulative egg exposure to unusually hot days over many years hastens cognitive decline. However, this was the case only for black people, or white or Hispanic people, and for residents of poorer but not wealthier neighborhoods. Open quote. High egg exposure to egg extreme heat can affect cognitive decline, but does so unequally across the population. Close a quote. The researchers write in the Journal of Epidemiology and Communication Health. Okay, so I think is, to be honest, a very alarming finding and really concerning. So I think that you've actually got two aspects here. To be honest, probably more, but I'm only going to comment on two. So I would be really interested to know in why is it poor people and black people? Of course, they could be like separated, or it could be only a poor black people and not richer black people. So I would think there's got to be more research into why that's the case. So why does this only affect black people and not white or Hispanic people? Is this biological thing? Is this psychological? Is this a societal level factor? Or maybe an individual neighborhood factor, which isn't reflected in larger US society? To be honest, I think it's more, I don't know, it's probably more systemic, but without more research, I have no idea, to be honest. And then I think the other thing to look at is, what do we do next? Because how do we minimize this? Well, how do we just do more public health messaging and like raise awareness? Of course, the large issue is, of course, you've got to tackle climate change to decrease the extreme heat, which will only increase over time. So it'd be interesting to see like how the public health organisations actually use this research that, because something's got to be done, because the more people that experience cognitive decline, then they put larger pressures on healthcare services, dementia services, etc. So the final one is, what makes a great gift? It's the time of the year again when many of us are scratching our heads on what to give a loved one. And yes, my mum is firmly in that boat. In fact, it's pretty much a daily conversation at the moment. What do you want? What do you want? I want to get you another present. And it's like, I don't know. I have everything I need. And if she suggests getting me a chain one more time, bearing in mind I don't wear any sort of like accessories, I'm going to scream. Luckily, we have a podcast episode to help you out. And to be honest, I also think the Psychology World podcast does too. So revisit episode 4 of PsychCrunch with us this week as we learn what makes an excellent present, from giver-centric offerings to the rise of ethical gifts. guests Lisa Kavanagh, Laura Aitken, and Alex Ferdinand are sure to give you plenty of seasonal inspiration. Okay then, and I'm not going to continue to read that because that would be free advertising to the BBS, which I'm not going to do. But the thing that I do want to mention here is that gift to give him, I would say don't stress yourself out about it. As long as you do something that's thoughtful, nice, and it shows that you know the person, which I mean is a lot easier said than done, then you're going to be fine though. I definitely think it's sort of like a listening skill act-like activity because I'm going to talk about this more in the personal update, but I had a friend round like this week and I wanted to like see a prize of my friend, and the surprise that I got them, which was like bowling, they had just done it for a comment when we went to lunch like last week. Definitely try and like listen throughout the year, because I think people do give general hints. Apparently I don't, according to my parents and my family, but I'm pretty sure I do somehow. At least I like to think I do. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the person update. So we're moving on to the person update. This week has been very busy and really action-packed, in the sense that so much has actually happened and is actually been quite entertaining. And there are points that I actually want to make about all of these things, though. So there's a few things. So first of all, I've had a really like good week. I've been doing the stuff that I like. I didn't go to university on a Wednesday for my stats lecture because I had car problems. Turns out I thought my car battery was dead, because it was so cold my handbrake had actually frozen itself onto the car or something like that. I'm really not a car person, so I don't know how to explain it enough. So I didn't go to university. Best day ever. I did all my stats work at home, and I honestly felt so much better. So when that was combined with the activity scheduling and the other mental health stuff that I've been like doing, I've had an absolute brilliant week. I've loved it this week. So with the takeaway from this little section of the personal update is just do what you enjoy. And I'm definitely not advocating for you to miss lectures or for you to miss a day out of work. But to be honest, days off are really, really valuable from time to time. And to be honest, if you can work flexibly from home, maybe ask if you could do that, because if that benefits you. But that's far too individual for me to discuss at any depth. So something else I want to mention is, as everyone probably knows here, especially if you've been a psychology student before, then you know, at least in like modern years, or at least the past few years, whenever there's a new psychology cohort at the university, WhatsApp groups or similar stuff get created. And I've never really been part of these WhatsApp groups. I've never really like focused too much on them, simply because I'm not that interested, and to be honest, I am just not social enough. So I join them, never really look at them, and I certainly never ever respond. But there's been so much drama this week because of our stats lecturer, and thankfully, because he's so rubbish, the university is making him step down, which I'm really happy about. So we're actually going to get a good, high-quality teaching. So there's two things I want to mention here. So firstly, if you're a psychology student, and if you're having a problem with your course, then definitely go and talk to the university. At the end of the day, the university is there to support your teaching because you're paying them money. And if there's any university staff listening like to this, I think that you probably had one of two reactions. You either laughed in agreement or huffed and puffed because you don't like people thinking like that. But largely though, it's like quite true. And universities, they actually want students to have good experiences. So definitely, like, if you're having a problem contact your university, tell them what the problem is so they can investigate and hopefully fix it. That's what we all did with our statistics lecturer, and thankfully something really good happening about it. But then the other thing that I wanted to mention related to this is that because you start responding, if you interact with other psychology students, even if it's in the WhatsApp group, then people start to know you, they start to like you, etc. And you will start to recognize people though. And so much so that I actually got a social offer from the social psychology master's lot. So I'm doing clinical psychology. I only interact with the social psychology lot for one of my optional modules, but because I was responding and being quite helpful and quite supportive in the WhatsApp group, and I've sort of interacted with some of them before, actually in class though, but they all invited me out. Granted, I can't get away because I'm already at a university social that night, but it's still really nice though. So universities, what you put in is what you get out. And finally, so I'm going to have to be somewhat vague, but all of you long-term listeners of the podcast episode, you guys all will know about my trauma and my mental health and basically how traumatized I've been around, being gay and all of that sort of a topic though. Something really interesting happened this week though, which actually shows massive progress for my family, myself, and basically everything for my breakdown back in August. So one of my friends, who's not very gay, because that's really, really harsh though. So basically, you can just tell they're gay, and I really like them, they're amazing, etc. But because they live in Canterbury, and I live in Medway, which is about a 40-minute drive, they're we can't always spontaneously just meet up unless I'm down at the university when they have a lecture. To be honest, it's really not that often though. And we've been wanting to spend some time together, properly as friends for a while, because we won't see each other now for 6 weeks, because they're going away before the university break ends. Anyway though, so I suggested, because me and my family, we want to show that we're really supportive of each other now, I asked if they could stay over. And to cut a very long story short, the answer was yes. And this was quite a major deal for my family, because they have never allowed an openly gay person to come round, just spend time as a friend, talk to my family, being supportive, and basically just be a very normal thing though. This has never happened. So the fact that it did, it went really well. It was really nice. Me and my friend laughed a lot. We watched some stuff. And if you guys want science fiction film recommendations, there's a good film from 2007 called Sunshine. It's actually not bad. I mean, my friend's a physics student, so they sort of died towards the end of it, but I quite liked it. As a science fiction writer, I quite admire it, because there was a lot of shaking of hands, what that means is that they sort of said, we know this doesn't work in real life, but we're going to do it because it looks good. Now, as a writer, I admire that a lot. So there is a point to the story, which I will reach in a minute though. So it was all really good. We all had a really a nice time, and it was just really good though. So the whole point of this little story is that I don't know every single other person who's listened to the podcast episode. So some of you might be going through similar stuff. I know I've done enough gay content to probably get a few listeners that are queer. So in case any of you come from unsupportive families, then things can definitely get better. And it takes time. Like, last night wasn't perfect. It was tense at times, simply because this is just not something that my family's had to practice before, or something that they've ever wanted to even try before. So yeah, it wasn't perfect, but it was so nice. So it can get better. It might not, but I really do believe that there's always hope. And just as a little like a side note, last night I took my friend bowling as a surprise, and oh my god, I do not bowl. I really cannot bowl. I mean, like, I think everyone knows the basic premise, like the maximum score of a bowling is about 100, because you bowl 10 times and you have to hit 10 pins down. We played 3 games. I think my score was about 40, 40, 50. My friend's score was like 90, 90, 100. And it was like, yeah, I mean, like, I just don't bowl. I'm absolutely rubbish at it. And it's even worse when once I went to bowl, I let the ball go too early. So the ball rolled back behind me, smashed into the little children ramps. Yeah, so as you can tell, I'm a natural bowler. Not. So as always, I always love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, connorwiley@connorwiley.net. You can always leave a comment at the show notes at connorwiley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet me on Twitter at @SciFiWiley. I always love to hear from all of you, because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And you can always comment on the Facebook post at Connor Whiteley Psychology Author. And today's episode has been sponsored by Abnormal Psychology, the causes and treatments of depression, anxiety, and more. So this is a great sponsor for today's episode, because activity scheduling, it's one of the main forms of behavioural activation, which is a massive component of cognitive behavioural therapy, which is a very effective treatment for depression, which this book dedicates a whole chapter to. But this book also looks at the biological, cognitive, and the social reasons for depression, what is anxiety, including all of the different types of anxiety conditions. And it also looks like a PTSD, schizophrenia, and a whole bunch of other really fascinating mental health conditions. So if you're interested in that, then I definitely do recommend this book. And then the book also goes into some of the cultural differences between different mental health treatments. So, and it introduces you to the idea of culturally adapting your treatment to different client groups. And then it also focuses on the psychological and the biological treatments of depression. So I really do recommend it. This is a great, really easy to understand book though, because it really does help you to deepen in your knowledge about what we talk about in today's episode. So that's Abnormal Psychology, the causes and treatments of depression, anxiety, and more. Available from all major ebook retailers, and you can order the paperback and hardback version from Amazon, your local bookstore, or local library if you request it. So whilst buying books helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And as always, a massive thank you to my patrons, because your support shows that you like the show, you want it to continue. So if you wanted to become a patron and get tons of great rewards, then you can by heading over to patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about how activity scheduling improves a depressed mood. So this is a great podcast episode that I found really useful. So I hope you do too. So let's dive into it. Why is activity scheduling needed? When people experience a depressive episode, The vast majority of people can't take part in activities they used to find fun, relaxing and enjoyable. Since depressed mood, feeling tired and a lot of other depressive symptoms can make people withdraw from the world. And whilst we all know that this is true from our lectures and other interactions with our service users, I've definitely found this recently because there have been at times when all I've been able to do is just lie on my bed, not talk, interact or see anyone. And I actually just want to sleep, but my evil body says a no. As a result, these depressive symptoms can make people experience periods of inactivity, which are not helpful. Due to these periods of inactivity can help maintain depression. And while I don't have a major depression disorder, but most of us can relate because feeling depressed is a part of life and it only becomes a mental health condition when it happens for a long period of time and causes clinically significant levels of psychological stress and impaired functioning. Last week, at the time of writing, I found that my inactivity would only make me ruminate more and more. Whereas today, when I finish an activity that brought me a lot of joy, finishing a short story by the way, my depression was burnt away for a few hours. And that's something I found, I genuinely found that quite weird because, I'll be honest, me and my family have been really quite anxious about my friends coming round, simply because of what it means for all of us as a family. And Monday, I was quite anxious. I was almost like depressed about what if it goes wrong. Like, I actually cried at one point, but I cried because of something that I wrote down, actually. But when I finished that short story, granted, it took me 2 hours to actually start writing it or start finishing it. It was just such a weird sense of joy that I wasn't depressed for hours. It was just so nice. The reason why inactivity can maintain depression is because it causes rumination and makes people focus on the negative emotions and thoughts. Hence, this makes it even harder for people to have the motivation to start positive activities that might decrease their distress mood, as well as inactivity means that a person is likely to miss out on opportunities that could improve their mood. Also, one of my problems for the past few weeks has actually been starting stuff. For example, I know writing a psychology blog post and writing fiction brings me a lot of joy, but the motivation is seriously hard. And a great example is actually the blog post that I'm reading from, because the blog post when I was actually wanting to write this, I wanted to start it an hour ago, but it had actually taken me an hour, or to be honest, 2 hours, to actually find the motivation to write it. So motivation, definitely something I'm still learning. And I didn't include this in the blog post, but what I'm finding is that Monday, I was productive. Tuesday, I was even more productive. Wednesday, because I didn't go to my stats lecture, I was even more productive. But then because I was out of that routine Thursday and Friday, today, even because it's Saturday, and because I have the house to myself, my productivity is back to where it was Monday. To be honest, it's actually even worse than Monday. So it's just about building a routine and stamina, to be honest. What is activity scheduling? Now that we understand why activity scheduling is needed, we need to know what is it and how it works. To put it simply, activity scheduling is where a depressed person schedules in activities they enjoy, and these activities are likely to increase their mood. activity scheduling works by behavioral activation, which is a cognitive behavioral treatment for depression that focuses on finding and doing activities that the person enjoys. As well as, research consistently shows that scheduling and doing these activities increases mood and decreases depressive symptoms. How to use activity scheduling? Firstly, a client would need to monitor their activities for 1 week so they can note down everything they do. This includes any activities they do and any periods of time when they don't do anything. Clients should do this because it helps them see when to add in activities and when they start to do activities. Monitoring the week allows them to keep track of their mood in relation to their activities. Personally, because I started this blog post last night and I'm finishing it this morning, I'm sort of glad that I only keep track of my activities in the morning, since I've just waited 2 hours doing busy work and lying on my bedroom floor, feeling depressed and down because of something in particular. Yet, if I was actually doing this, then I would want to record both of those things. Secondly, clients should use a calendar to schedule in daily activities, because for people with depression, bipolar disorder and other mood disorders, it's important to keep a regular schedule. Not only because a regular schedule helps with mood stability, but scheduling in activities is a way to make sure a client actually does activities at a fixed appropriate time of day. In addition, it's important that a client's schedule stays manageable, because a client shouldn't fill up their schedule with too many activities because that might be too intensive for them, as well as it might be helpful for them to choose a mixture of activities, like some activities that are active and others that allow the client to decompress and unwind. Firstly, a client should do a mixture of important and enjoyable activities. Since clients need to do fun and enjoyable activities to increase pleasure and decrease their depressed mood, a lot of repetition of doing these pleasurable activities to get to the same sort of pleasure as they did before their depressed mood. However, important activities are still important as well, due to these activities that need to get done, but they're harder to complete when depressed. For example, paying bills, doing a chore, doing a coursework, or finishing anything at your job. These important activities are important to do because they help a client increase their sense of mastery and achievement, and this has a positive knock-on effect as well, which is even more important when we consider how depressed people are more self-critical. So it's important to balance this out with a positive feelings of achievement. And I'm not sure if I actually mentioned this on the blog post, but something that I'm having to do at the moment is I can only start stuff and finish stuff the next day, or to be honest, whenever I get around to actually like doing it, simply because doing something completely, it's just a bit too much at the moment, and it basically kills my motivation of thinking, oh no, I have to do this entire thing. So that's just like another example. Penultimately, it is critical that clients keep their activities small and manageable. And this is something that I completely understand, because this is one of the reasons why me going to Newcastle not long after a mental health breakdown wasn't a best idea. It was way too big and it did a lot more harm than good. Therefore, but when it comes to completing a whole task, this can make a client feel very overwhelmed when experiencing depression. So it's important to break down the activity into small chunks. And this I actually did the other night. And I'm actually quite surprised that I'm open enough to put this in a podcast episode, because I wanted to go on my laptop and do some business work, but I was just way too down to actually do it. So I had to break down the task. So I was just sitting on my desk chair by the door for a bit. Then I broke down the task of going over to my laptop, turning it on, then doing something into a smaller chunks, and it did help a lot. Other people might need to do 50% of a task today, then finish it tomorrow, like I'm doing with this particular blog post, as well as sometimes old hobbies feel overwhelming to start small, and I gradually spend more and more time doing it. Therefore, one day a client might be able to spend as long as on their hobby and get as much pleasure from it as they are used to. Finally, a client should use mood tracking to note changes in their mood. This is a critical step in activity scheduling, because mood tracking is a great way to recognize the relationship between doing activities that you enjoy and finding important, and how it benefits your mood. As a result, clients should record their mood before and after an activity to see how they feel. Since seeing a positive difference, even a small one, can help with motivation and continuing to do what you enjoy, so the benefits can only grow over time, all whilst your mood remains balanced. Conclusion. Personally, I do love behavioural activation and activity scheduling, because I know firsthand how powerful it is. I was shocked yesterday at how great I felt after finishing that short story, because I love writing. It is an activity that I seriously love, and it was so nice not feeling depressed for a few hours after finishing it. And it's actually quite funny because it's a Matilda Plum short story, and she's basically a superhero psychologist, and in the far future, like late 2024, if you're interested, the story is called Face of Anxiety, in case you wanted to check it out. I certainly think that activity scheduling is something can all of us think about, because in our own lives enough. And if this podcast episode has taught you anything today, please let it be that we all have to make time for the activities that we love, whether you have depression or not. Anxiety? No. Activities are important, so always make sure that you have time to have fun, do what you love, and a smile. Sometimes improving your mental health is really as simple as that. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. I really did, and I love these more practical episodes. Of course, nothing on this podcast is any sort of official advice, but I found this really useful, and it was just, Monday was so nice because of this, and I really do understand now how important activity scheduling is. In fact, I was actually doing it earlier, about half an hour before dinner, because I'm quite scared about the month of December and some other stuff. I actually did some activity scheduling. Just every single day I have something to look forward to, but I might talk about that in a future podcast episode, so who knows. So if you know someone who would enjoy today's episode, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you want your people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, definitely check out A Normal Psychology, The Causes and Treatments of Depression, Anxiety and More, available in all usual places. And definitely check out patreon.com/thepsychologywirepodcast if you want to become a patron. So have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favorite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conwhiteley.net. So have a great day, and I'll see you next time.